This is the Anderson Files on Podclips. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President and Registered Investment Advisor of the Warner Companies, a Foundation Risk Partners Warburg Pincus company. The Warner Companies is a registered investment advisor with securities offered through M Holdings Security Incorporated, member of FINRA and SIPC. And now your host, friend and colleague, Mike Anderson.
Real estate today. Joining me is Chloe DeVerrier. And Chloe is a breath of fresh air in the Los Angeles real estate scene. She's an exceptional realtor with Coldwell Banker and previously has worked with one of the top 50 real estate teams in the nation. In addition, beyond her successful real estate career, she has become a well-respected speaker, coaching other realtors both nationally and internationally on how to bring an innovative approach to real estate marketing and social media. Chloe is the recipient of the International Sterling Society Award and was named as a 2022 Top 20 Real Estate Agent on social media in Los Angeles. Chloe, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Mike.
Oh, great to have you. And to get started, you know, how's the market? What's going on?
You know, I think that is the question that everyone is always asking. Everyone's always trying to time the market, if you say so. But, you know, obviously the market is different from how it was a couple of years ago. And I think that people are definitely witnessing now that the market has softened a bit. But I think at the same time, the media does a fantastic job in trying to create fear across buyers and sellers across the country. And I think people need to realize at times that national market news isn't necessarily always the case for hyperlocal news and hyperlocal market. You know, despite rates going up a bit in the last couple of years, you know, the market overall in Los Angeles has been pretty strong. I mean, it's softened. It's not as crazy it was a couple of years ago. But, you know, with properly priced homes, we're still seeing homes go in multiple offers. It's just now not 30 plus offers in, you know, in a competition, but more of three or four. So it's definitely been a transitional period, I think, for people to see. And if anything, it's becoming more of a healthy market. I think this time has been kind of just transitioning back to pre-pandemic when things were a little more normalized.
And are you seeing as many cash deals as opposed to financing? How is that looking?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, obviously in LA, there's people here with money, right? We're definitely still seeing cash offers, but I would say it's not as prominent as during the pandemic. You know, I think during the COVID market, when you're competing against 30, 40, 50 people, that was the only way to stand out. And now, because there's less buyers in the market, people can get away with financing if needed. So most commonly, I'm seeing cash offers among investors and developers that are trying to compete for a teardown. But other than that, we're seeing a lot more finance deals, which I think is also just healthier and easier for a lot of buyers, and especially first-time buyers that are trying to get into the market as well.
Is the market, the upper end, the real upper end of the market, that much different, behaving that much different than the middle or lower end? Is there much difference?
Yeah. Well, so the luxury market in LA, I mean, we'll define luxury, right? In Los Angeles, you have 10 plus million, 25 plus million. You know, ever since April 1st in Los Angeles, you know, we were hit with the ULA, which I know has been getting a lot of pushback, and essentially any property over 5 million is getting an additional transfer property tax. So because of that, I think it's almost a little too soon to see the whole impact. But what I can say is that the upper end of, you know, luxury real estate has been hit hard because sellers don't want to sell. I mean, they're getting taxed hundreds of thousands of dollars, even millions sometimes, extra money than if they were to have sold just a few months prior. So we've definitely seen a hit in terms of percentages in that department. But I think there has been a lot of petitions and pushback, and it will be interesting to see if the ULA measure is going to kind of continue forward as years go on.
And for sellers, what would you say is the biggest challenge right now?
I think the biggest challenge for sellers right now is kind of just coming to terms with the fact that the market is different. You know, for a few years during the pandemic market, you could put your home on the market. You could not do the best comping and pricing the home, right? And somehow it's going to still sell for hundreds of thousands over 30 plus offers in 24 hours. I mean, even I remember during the pandemic, I worked on one deal that we sold $1 million over the asking price. And we actually had over 60 offers, which is just incredibly crazy to me, you know, to see. And I think today, you know, because the market is a little more tame and, you know, because the rates are a little bit higher, there's not as much competition, there's not as many buyers, pricing your home is so important to do it correctly. And I think sellers are struggling with that. And, you know, I think sellers oftentimes they want to do aspirational pricing. They want to see, you know, I think every seller always has a number in mind that they would love to get in the end. And sometimes sellers can make the mistake to price it a little too high. And because the market is a little more softened now, if you price a little too high to test the waters, then you start to sit on the market. And once you start sitting on the market, even if it's just for over 30 or 60 days, psychologically, from the buyer's perspective, they start to think, oh, okay, what's wrong with that house? Something has to be wrong. Nobody wants to buy it. And that could be not the case at all. It could be a gorgeous, perfect house, but it's just not priced properly. So I think that's the biggest challenge for people right now. And I think sellers just need to be really realistic. I've learned, you know, since the very beginning of my career, it's all a numbers game. It's psychology. And if you want to go higher up in price, the best thing you can do for yourself is price just under market value and then let the buyers bid themselves up against it to get that price that you want.
Are you seeing sellers taking more time to prep their home? Let's say, you know, that an individual, a couple, a family's been in a home for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the place may need a little bit of work internally, externally. Yeah. And do you see that happening?
100%. And I think regardless in any market that we are in, it's really important to present the home in the best possible light. And, you know, when you lived in a home, let's just say for 15, 20 years, obviously it's become your home, you're emotionally attached. You might have personal pictures around or different colored walls because it's a little more fun for your family. But we have to remember that when we're selling a property, we have to go into it with the perspective of a buyer. Buyers want something that's clean, it's universal, it's a blank slate. So, you know, I always recommend that if necessary, we go in and do a little bit of a touch up. Now, you have to be careful because I think sometimes sellers get a little too ahead of themselves and they start, you know, wanting to do too much to the house, too many renovations. And at some time, the time and the financial component of that doesn't ultimately always bring back the biggest return that you're looking for. So sometimes it's as simple as just doing a paint job, painting everything white, cleaning up the landscaping, maybe bringing in a stager. All of those little things makes a huge difference. You know, I've been in homes that are a little outdated, let's just say. You know, they have the classic brown cabinets in the kitchen and in the bathroom. And I will say, though, older homes with those types of cabinetry and wood, they tend to be so much more better quality than cabinets that you would buy today. But it's as simple as getting a painter in there and refinishing them and putting in new hardware. It's cheap, you know, it's affordable, and it makes the biggest, biggest difference in terms of appeal and first impressions for a buyer. So doing some work up front is really important. And you know, what's great about, you know, I work with Total Banker, as you said in the beginning, we actually offer a program called Real Vitalize. And so this essentially allows sellers to make these changes to their home, including staging and landscaping, without paying any money out of pocket up front. And this is a partnership we basically create across the company where we can do that for our clients. And then when we sell, then it's taken from the overall, you know, proceeds to the seller. But that's a great way to get in there and do some work too, if you don't have capital sitting, you know, to make those changes to your home.
I'm speaking with Chloe DeVerrier, realtor, on the current real estate market in LA and around the country. And this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Chloe, turning to a related subject, I know you're a marketing and social media expert. I would definitely put it in that category. Can you share with us why this is so important today when it comes to selling?
Yeah, you know, as I said earlier, the market is different now, right? It's softened. And so what that means for agents, for sellers, is that we have to put more care, love, and attention into selling a property. And, you know, it's not like during the pandemic where you could just put a sign outside the front of the door and that's it, sold. You know, now I always say it's like about going back to the basics and really analyzing how are we going to properly market a property out to the public to get and reach as many buyers as possible. And sometimes even in LA, I mean, there's so many people constantly relocating in and out of Los Angeles. You might have a buyer from Santa Barbara. You might have a buyer from New York. And so this allows us, you know, to have the right marketing strategy and plan to make sure that you're reaching every single possible potential client or buyer that you can get your hands on to make sure that you're giving your client the best opportunity to sell for the best price. And that means, you know, and I know you say that I'm a social media expert, but also all avenues of marketing, whether it's print, it's digital, on TV, Google, YouTube ads, these are all really, really important to making sure that we're getting the word out to every single person.
And can you give a few examples of social media marketing you do that most agents typically struggle with?
Yeah. You know, I think, well, first of all, I think most agents in general struggle with social media in the first place. And that's kind of where my passion for teaching agents to learn and do the same has come from. You know, for me, I built my career on a digital presence. And because of that, I've taught myself over the many years on that I've been in business how to properly do targeted social media, advertising. And also, I think one of the things that I've really become skilled at is videography and learning how to edit and film and shoot all of these kind of marketing promos for real estate in a way that is entertaining and eye-capturing to buyers. So I have a lot of fun with filming properties, doing walkthroughs, showings, and just gives the opportunity to really put a spotlight on any home that I'm working with.
And in building a social media presence, and I know you've been developing this over many years, how has it helped your personal brand and the business?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, the first thing that's been incredibly beneficial for both me and for my clients is building a huge referral network. You know, through my social media, I have connections to a lot of agents, but also through my speaking career, I've pretty much landed a relationship with every top producing agent in almost every single state. So anyone that I know or friends or colleagues that have clients that need to relocate, having that social platform has really allowed me to build those connections. I think also, you know, having a YouTube channel, for example, I now have over 15,000 subscribers, allows me to reach buyers and sellers outside of my normal scope of area. You know, for example, I have a client from Toronto, Canada, And actually, he's coming in this weekend to tour some properties with me. But that was initially a connection made through YouTube, which, you know, in a normal world, I would never have connected with someone in another country. And I think my favorite part about how social media has kind of helped my brand and also my business is being given a platform that allows me to educate. And if any of you, you know, your viewers end up looking at my social media pages, you'll see that I'm very heavy on education, whether it's, you know, buying tips, selling tips, market updates, house hacking, and even for agents, you know, how to get into this industry, how to become a successful realtor in any state that you're working in. So that's been a really fantastic platform to just honestly connect with people all over the country.
And I'm curious, how long has it taken to build a following of 15,000 on social media? No, I'm just curious, how long did that take?
Yeah, that's a great question. At this point, it's been about 3.5 years. I think with everything in life, the first chunk of that time frame is really slow moving. You know, even in business or when you first get into the industry and you're prospecting, it takes 1.5 years to kind of land a farm or a client. And same thing with social media. But as soon as I hit kind of that initial hump for qualification to monetize my content, I kind of just started rolling again. You know, and I think it also comes down to just actually creating content that people want to watch. I've had a couple of videos now, quote unquote, go viral, I guess you can say. One of my most successful videos, I think, has close to 350,000 views now. And I think creating content like that is kind of what boosted my exposure to building my following.
And what advice would you give to the first-time buyer just coming into the market currently? How would you guide them?
I love working with first-time buyers. I know a lot of people don't. I think that it is so fun to work with them and go through the process. There's something that you just can't put your finger on about buying your first home and getting, being handed, you know, your keys. But at the same time, I've learned that working with first-time buyers oftentimes is that they are so scared. And there is so much fear surrounding purchasing something. And don't get me wrong, I totally get it. I mean, this is the first time that an individual or a couple is purchasing something worth that amount of money. It's a very scary thought. But I think number one thing is remove that fear and just have fun with it. You know, fear comes from lack of education. And so that's why education is so important to me, because when I connect with a first-time buyer, the first thing that we do is we sit down and we talk about the entire home buying process and emphasizing that they, it's not like they have to repeat back to me the entire process of, okay, this is when we open escrow and this is when we do inspections and this is when we call the lender. That's my job. It's my job to hold my client's hands through the process. So just have fun with it. Try and go at it without, you know, the idea of fear, and don't focus on everything that everyone's saying in the market. There's so much fear right now with rates. You know, I think, you know, 2 years ago, rates were at 3%, and that is a historical low. And now we're, you know, in the mid sixes, approaching 7. But historically, that is still so low compared to some rates in our history. I mean, at one point, rates were at 18%. And so, you know, don't focus so much on the rate, but focus more on the purchase price. I think that's where people get a little hung up. You can always in the future go back and refinance on your home. You know, drop your rate to a lower rate, but you can never go back and change your purchase price. And, you know, I think people get hung up on like, oh, if I had a 3% interest rate, but then you're paying $200,000 over asking. Versus now, there's less competition. You can get, you know, a home at asking or even under asking and at a slightly higher rate, and then go back in and refinance in the future when it comes down. Rates are bound to come down. You know, they've been saying that for a while now. It's just a matter of time. And so that is something to kind of really hold on to. I think third advice that I can give is don't get hung up on buying your dream home the very first time. we grow up in these houses, right, with our families. We have a dream idea. We want a pool. We want a huge house. We want a yard. And then, at least in Los Angeles, this is not a cheap city. This is a very expensive city. And I think buyers get that initial slap in the face sometimes where they can't get, you know, what they want with the budget that they're given. And people forget that most people in this world will buy a house a second or a third time. So buy that first home that's livable, you love it, and even if it's not your dream home, give it a couple of years and then you can sell it, build some equity, build some more money, and go to the next big thing.
Realtor Chloe DeVerrier is my guest today, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io.
The Anderson Files is a proud advocate for the Small Business Council of America. For decades, the SBCA has been the voice for U.S. small business on the Hill and to the administration, successfully pursuing favorable tax, benefits, and estate legislation. To learn more and to become a member or sponsor, go to www.sbca.net.
Chloe, turning to a little bit more regarding buying, what are some of the misconceptions that are out there when you're on the buying side of the equation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first one is the most common one, but you don't have to put 20% down when you're buying a house. I think that's been drilled into everyone's mind. You know, first-time buyers, there's the FHA program where you can put 3.5% down, or you can do a conventional loan, even down to 3%. Now, personally, I would say in my experience, I would always choose conventional over an FHA loan if possible. FHA loans just tend to have, they're a little more difficult to work with. But the point being is you don't always have to put 20% down to purchase a home. Second misconception, or even maybe not a misconception, but just general knowledge that people don't know, but working with an agent is completely free. So that's, you know, don't walk away from someone that wants to help you and hold your hand. I mean, obviously choose wisely and make sure that the person that you're working with, you have a good relationship with. But, you know, if Mike, if you and I were to work together, you're not paying me a single dime out of your pocket. My commission comes directly from the seller. And so that's, you know, a little stress that can be alleviated from a buyer's shoulders, knowing that they have someone supporting them and it's not going to cost them. And third misconception, I think, especially for first-time buyers, is that when you open escrow or you get an accepted offer, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're locked in right then and there. I think that's where another part of the fear comes from first-time buyers, is I think that as soon as they get an accepted offer, they have to buy that house. But, you know, if you're an experienced buyer or seller, you'll know is that there's a contingency period to do inspections, to have an appraisal, to make sure that your loan is clean, and give you the opportunity to back out if you have to.
I'm curious now, what are you seeing in regards to financing either under an ARM, adjustable, or a fixed rate? Is there much advantage one way or the other in the current environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's more common to see a fixed rate over an ARM, but I think it honestly just comes down to the numbers and working with a good lender. You know, a good lender will be able to sit down with you because it's very a case by case situation. For some clients, an ARM might be better based off of their financial situation. For others, it might be a fixed rate. It really just depends on their financial profile. So I would say for my best advice that I can give is reach out to a really good qualified lender that can run with the numbers, play around with it, go up and down and see what's going to land you the very best deal for you.
Can you share with us a crazy or a funny story that's happened through your career?
Oh my goodness. I feel like I've had so many funky instances in my career. I guess one that comes to mind that is, I think will always stick with me is in the beginning of my career, I was working on a home on Mandeville Canyon in Brentwood. We had a listing up there. And as you know, if you live down here, that it's in the canyon, you know, you're up in the hills. And I was showing this property, and I remember we didn't have a key to the front door. We always had to go through the backyard, open through the back door, and then get into the home to prepare for a showing. And I always showed up well dressed, had my high heels on, and I'm, you know, walking through the backyard. And before I know it, I see a 6 foot long black snake across this very skinny pathway. And I'm panicking. I don't know about you, Mike, but I hate snakes. Anything that's a reptile, it scares me. And so I'm stopped dead in my tracks. I'm like, what am I going to do? There is a 6 foot long snake. I have a buyer showing up in 10 minutes to see this house. I need to get the house open, the lights on and everything. And so I willed up all this courage and I climbed over the fence to hop over the snake and I ran for my life. And so I finally get in the house and open up all the doors. I pop back out 5 minutes later, snake is gone. And I've convinced myself that the snake maybe is in the side of the house, but we're going to pretend it's not. And buyer shows up, everything's great, snake doesn't come out, and then I'm waiting for another 10 minutes before another buyer shows up for a showing, and I look down at my foot, and there is a half-eaten, 2 foot lizard by my foot, and I remember, first of all, I'm freaking out, but second of all, I don't want a client to walk into the house and see a lizard with a bleeding tail running around the house. So I remember kicking it out and just praying that it didn't come back into the house. So this house definitely gave me some interesting stories. Even same house, we lost the key and I had to climb through the doggy door to get it open. So,
oh my gosh.
I have a lot for my clients. That's all I can say.
Going the extra mile, absolutely. So the snake just disappeared? It never reappeared?
No, but who knows? It could have been in the master bedroom because it was right by the master bedroom door. So you never know.
You never
not
know.
My house anymore. It's sold. Not my problem. And I'm very happy.
Chloe, as we wrap up, what advice would you give to anyone trying to navigate the real estate market right now in this environment?
Yeah, I mean, two simple things. Don't overcomplicate it. You know, get educated, and then that is going to alleviate so much of the stress. And second advice is just have fun. I think people get too focused on the details sometimes, but buying or selling a home, making a move is often, you know, affiliated with a life change, a big life change. And that is something that is very exciting. So enjoy the journey, enjoy the process. And I always firmly believe that it will always work out in the end.
And Chloe, for our listeners to reach you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, so my direct cell number, if anyone ever wants to give me a call, is 310-890-9656. If you want to find me on Instagram, my Instagram handle is dreamliving.la. And everything else, you can just Google my first and last name. I know it's a complicated name. Mike and I were, you know, debating over how to pronounce my last name, but my last name.
I just wanted to make sure it was right.
Yes. My last name is DeVerrier, and everything will pull up for you on Google.
Chloe, thanks so much for guesting today and giving us a snapshot of real estate today in LA, and hope to have you back in the future.
And thanks for having me, Mike. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to the Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclips.io and check on the financial channel for more episodes and information on the Anderson Files.